Oh, welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We got a very special guest joining us in studio as well. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them in one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And now joining us in studio, regular contributor here on the show, former NHL player, now Canucks analyst, he is Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man?
Not too much. What are you up to? Just talking.
Just talking Canucks. What I do every day.
You're an old pro, though. You were telling an anecdote. We were all laughing before.
Yes.
Welcoming Landon onto the program. And the song started playing.
Yeah.
And you're still telling the story. And I was like, oh my God, is he going to miss the drop beat? And I was like filling with anxiety.
No.
You filled just in time.
No. It's all good. I know. I will old say the one thing about this industry is you get a very good sense of like time. Of how long specific increments of time are.
Speak for yourself.
And that's why I keep saying I got to get in here with both of you. Because I'm like, there's so much more to learn here.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, no,
go ahead.
I mean, Landon, the Canucks play your former team. In fact, they played two of your former teams over the course of this road trip. But what did you make of the pair of games that they played without Filip Hronek? Because, and I'm curious to get your take on this, even though they didn't play great against Boston and Pittsburgh, to me, these two games that went to overtime against the Sabres and the Red Wings, it felt a little more noticeable to me that maybe they were missing a few clicks off their fastball with some of the absences.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to, it doesn't matter how much everyone steps up or, you know, kind of, you know, jumps into it and really like makes their presence known. Like there's a reason they're signed at the numbers they're signed for and on the lines they're supposed to be. Like that's where they're at. And yeah, you can get them to jump up and, you know, give a boost here or there, but to expect it every night, 60 minutes, like it's a lot. There's a reason that the star players are the stars and the rest of the cast is the rest of the cast. And that's no shade to them. It's just, it is what it is. So, you know, I think they did a really good job. The thing that I liked was the fact that it almost forced them to go back to basics even more than they already were, trying to kind of get some steam rolling here. And just knowing that, you know, every little mistake is so much more highlighted, especially with Hronek out now. Like, the back end's moving around a lot. Pairs are moving. It, you know, it looked today again. They have changed again. Like, there's a lot going on. Like, you need to be dialed in to get results.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's pretty remarkable, too, because Quinn Hughes, I mean, already this entire season, it feels like he's taken on even more of a burden, right? And, you know, Elias Pettersson, first of all, not really playing up to his standard. JT Miller out of a lineup. And then his sidekick, Filip Hronek, out of a lineup. And it's like, okay, can you do even more? And lo and behold, he's the NHL second star of the week, and he's looked just incredible over these last few games.
Also, he should have been the first star of the week. I'm higher on Macklin Celebrini than anybody, but that's pure marketing. Let's be real. Sorry.
Like, are there still more levels for him to get to? It's incredible that every time they need him, he finds a way to elevate his game even more.
Yeah, like I feel like it's hard to say there's another level or another, you know, step for him to take, but every time that they've asked him to do more, he does it. And the thing that is so, you know, interesting to me is how like he steps up but his game doesn't change. Like he might carry it a little more or know that, you know, if he's running it at the top of the point, like he already walks it so well and finds those players once he starts moving, but I think he understands a bit more of, you know, when he needs to really push, when that, you know, when it's a true opening, a true chance, and not trying to force it when it's not there, because he's playing so much and he knows that a lot of it falls on his shoulders. Like, it's so easy to just kind of say, you know, screw it to the defense. Like, I need to produce and help as much up there, but he's doing just as good a job on the back end and still finding ways to, he's still the forthright person of the offense, really. And it's impressive how it doesn't matter how big it is or the stage for him. Like, he just keeps playing the same way and his demeanor doesn't change. He just expects it of himself already.
So we often throw games at our guests, and we don't let them prepare, and we just sort of throw anvils at them while they're trying to swim. So we're going to do that with you here today. I want you to rank the top five Canucks that have stepped up to fuel this successful road trip.
This road trip,
so since the Ottawa game.
Well, I'll cheat and just go Lankin in one.
Yep.
Like, okay. Not that it's a step up, but like he still has to get in front of the puck. So yeah. I'd say he's doing his job and doing it pretty well.
I think you're right.
He's 10-0 on the road. It's outrageous. It's,
and 921 across. Like, remember where his game was trending before this road trip, right? There was at least some concern, right? That like, oh, has he leveled off? He's come in 921 with four wins on this trip. They're not doing this without him. I think that's a perfectly reasonable number one.
So I'll stop right there then. I nailed one. And I don't have to do the rest. Okay.
No, we got five to go. Let's go number two.
Number two, I'd say Suter.
Yep. I think that's the right call too. Damn, you're killing this.
Because I would say just over the stretch of the whole thing, yeah, mm-hmm. he's had his goals, but like he's been very rock steady for them. And he's one of those guys that has been really thrusted into way more ice time and responsibility, and he's handled it in stride.
He's their second line center right now. And you think about how important a position that is on a good team. And he's just like, yep, now I'm doing that too. And I'm doing it at a high level.
And not once have I heard anyone talking about like, you know, he's doing a good job, but man, I can't wait for him to get pushed back down. Like, yes, that is for the best for the team because it's only adding more depth in your lineup. But at the same time, like he's filled in like he should be the second line center at the moment.
The thing I'd add too is, you know, a lot of Canucks are like scoring or producing, and we'll get into them as you flesh out this list, I'm sure. But he's been doing it while actually matching it with volume. Like the Canucks are actually outshooting their opponents with him on the ice 5-on-5. They're kind of not without it with any other line. Like him and Garland are driving among their forward group. And I feel like the other lines are a lot of one and done. There's some dangerous chances. Their skill is playing, but that sort of Canucks MO that we're used to where they're stacking up offensive zone shifts, it feels like that's really only happening with Suter on the ice. I think he's been a key driver of it. So I think there's a lot there. He's the right call, in my opinion, to be number two on this list.
Okay.
Hey, you're on a streak.
You're killing it.
I know. It's almost adding more pressure, and I don't like it now. Number three, I would go, well, I mean, it's got to be DeBrusk.
No.
It's such a top O, but I mean, like, come on, he puts up a hat trick.
I was going to say that no matter who you said.
I was thinking about popping him down one more spot, but it's too low.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to be up there. I like that his game is starting to trend back to what his game needs to be.
Yep.
You know, I heard someone talking, like, you know, he's scoring in different ways, but you know, he's not, it doesn't have to be end-to-end rushes. Like, I can't remember the last time I saw Jake DeBrusk really have an end-to-end rush. Like, that's not his game anyway. Like, those first two goals, I would say, well, you know, they're basically the same goal. He's net front, he grabs a rebound, forces it around.
Yep.
But I would say, like, between those two and his overtime winner, like, those are the two goals that you see with DeBrusk. He's either right in front of the net, and he's got a great nose for it, trying to find that little soft area where he can pull it out of, or his shot really takes over, and like that thing couldn't have been any more perfect last night.
And I think those two goals on the power play, those could be big for DeBrusk personally for the rest of the season, right? Because he hasn't necessarily been first choice guy on the power play when the team's been healthy, but if he's doing that net front, I think even when Miller's back and they've got all their first choice guys, that he could still play a major role in the power play for them.
Well, yeah, what it does is it lets Miller get moved back to the outside where he's really good off that left flank coming down. Like he's got such a quick release, but he's also really good at hitting Besser, who's going to be back into the middle, like into the bumper spot most likely. Like they have a really good working relationship out of that. And now you have DeBrusk that can be down there a bit more, and like it's just another layer of, you know, before it was so easy to see, okay, it's Quinn over to Miller, he's already rolling, it's going to be a shot tip or it's going to be a shot. Like now there's another wrinkle to that. So I mean, I think it looks pretty good, and I think he's, you know, obviously had a pretty good little run here.
The deflection goal against Detroit, so the first of his two at the net front in that Red Wings game, looked a little Kuzmenko-ish, where you use that Pettersson shot from the right flank as a pass, right? And he was so dangerous with that in that, you know, Kuzmenko 39-goal season. I feel like we haven't seen it as much, in part because when Besser goes net front, he becomes a facilitator, right? That's he's really, obviously he'll score too, but he's really more of a passer from down low. I liked that. Like, that look to me was something where I'm just hungry for more of it. I want to see more of that because I think you can unlock an additional wrinkle where Pedersen's shot threat becomes sort of a playmaking weapon, something that I think this club has had when their power play has rolled, but maybe hasn't had in like 18 months here. DeBrusque's a good call. Also, 15 shots on this road trip. You know, it's not a surprise when this guy gets hot, the shots start coming. When the shots go away, that's when, you know, we've occasionally sort of hand wrung about, he's invisible sometimes, he's a streaky player, and had those conversations.
And that's the thing, like, he is a bit streaky, and that's totally okay to say. Like, that's not a knock. Like, a lot of scores are streaky, and it is nice when you can find like that one thing that really, it's kind of black or white to show like, this is what works when you're scoring, and this is what doesn't work when you're not. For a lot of guys, it's they stop skating. They're now looking for a play. Like, for DeBrusque, it was like he was almost waiting on the outside a little bit too much, and he kind of got himself in there. But the other thing to remember is, like, for a new player coming into a system, they talk about, you know, getting adjusted to the system, learning your new players and all of this. But what doesn't really get talked about is the rest of the team learning that player.
Right.
And what he likes and what works for him as well. So once all that starts to click, like, that's when the guy actually gets, you know, fully brought into the team, really.
All right, number four.
Yeah, I stalled long.
See, you're a radio vet already. While you're trying to figure out the next thing, while you prepare.
I got to come in. I got to learn from the best. You're talking
rag the puck while you figure out what the next subject is going to be.
Sorry, are you on with Sat later?
Oh, man, no comment. I will go, where are we at, four?
Yeah.
Four, I will say Pedersen. Because as much as he is the guy that, you know, everyone says, like, it's not even need to step up. It's you need to be yourself and bring what you did. Like, he has really come back into his own here in the last, you know, 3 weeks. But, you know, especially this road trip and the couple games beforehand, like, he has completely changed his game and his narrative and really the success of this team. Like, you take out his driving force offensively right now, and like, a lot of this doesn't work, right? Like, you know, Brandstrom's tying goal, like, that's a messed up play to Hughes or to Pedersen back door. And I feel like a few weeks ago or a month ago, like, he probably would have turned behind the net to buy a bit more time. Like, he grabbed that and instantly opened up and looked to where the next play was. And like, that looked like a really easy pass. But to get it by the first guy, okay, fine. Like, he's going to be able to do that. But he put it, what, an inch over the second guy's tape? And it needed to land, like, right after. Like, that is an elite pass for a guy that, and again, like, you can't put it past, like, that's a big moment, too.
Yes.
So I would go four with Pedersen.
Do you get the sense that he's simplified significantly? Like, I think about the assist he had in on the first goal in, was it Boston? The DeBrusque goal in Boston, where he just makes the quick pass up to Sherwood. Like, it was just a very straightforward, direct play. Now, he does it, you know, it's like HBO, right? Doing like a classic format story that you've seen eight other networks do, but they class it up, right? Yeah. It's like he's classing up the simple, direct plays, but it does feel like he's been able to author his turnaround in some ways. Not with fancy stuff, not with the stuff that the bro do your deeks Pedersen game, but just by sort of simplifying and playing direct. Do you get that sense?
I would agree. I agree with it, but I would also say I think the biggest difference in his game is how much more engaged he is. And like, again, like, that goes to that pass, that goes to the play I just mentioned, setting up Brandstrom. Like, you have to be physically engaged, and that doesn't mean going and hitting guys and stuff. Like, it means that you're ready to work when you get the puck. And, you know, which one was it that he outmuscles at the blue line after Quinn's pass gets deflected? I'm drawing a blank on it now. Goes across the blue line, and he's got someone on his back. Then he falls down. He makes the extra tip.
Right. Yes. Right?
Like all of that. Like to anyone just watching quickly, that looks like a guy that got pushed off a puck and he got lucky smacking it. But like he got his body into the right position that whether it goes good or bad, he's still going to be able to make a play on it.
Right.
And then as you're watching him fall, like his eyes are glued to the puck the entire time. Like, yeah, it's a poke and it could easily have missed, but like he's again, like he's in the right spot and that extra effort is there that I don't think the extra effort was there early.
Yeah, that was
he was trying to find everything.
That was late in the first period of the Detroit game, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And Shorty noted it on the broadcast. He was like, talked about how Tocchet would like the body positioning on it.
Well, and I think 16 points in 11 games from Pettersson, right? And I think it's fair to say, well, there's still more to come, but the fact that he's producing and maybe even not quite at his best, like, I think that's what people wanted to see, right? The whole idea of, okay, you're maybe the knee is still bothering you or you're still trying to find your top level of burst and all that, but you still have to find a way to produce and help the team. And I mean, he's doing that in a big way right now, right? Like, as you talked about, simplifying a little bit, the quality of passes, all of those things, it still might not be peak Pettersson, but he's producing and that's what counts.
And I think it's important too, because talking about all that, like he's doing all this with out JT Miller in the lineup. Yep. And yeah, obviously Miller comes back in, it helps everything along. But what it also does is, like, Miller's generally the one that takes the hardest matchups.
Mm.
And with him and Besser and whoever ends up on that other side, like, they're generally playing against the best line and the best D pairing. So, like, that's now Pettersson doing it. And, like, you have to remember, like, the step from the first pairing to the second pairing at the NHL level, except for like a couple teams that are, you know, really stacked up top or on the back end, like that's a big drop off. And you can really take advantage of that. If you're that next star that's in that lineup, like that's where you go to make your money there. Like those are kind of easier points. And he's not being able to do that because everyone is like, they know he is the option right now.
So I'm curious to get your take on this before we move on to number five on your list, which is the Canucks self-match Quinn Hughes to their top line with so much discipline that I sort of think the idea of softer comp for the second line in Vancouver anyway is different. Like I think one thing that has helped Pettersson here, and I agree with you, we're not seeing fully formed Pettersson in part because he's got 5 shots on goal, all situations on this road trip.
Yeah.
He's got 12 shot attempts. Like I do think when Pettersson is really back, we're going to see that be, you know, 3 or 4 attempts a game. Not that he's going to be a big volume guy, but he's going to be more than a shot per game, which is kind of where he's at right now. But the fact is with Miller out of the lineup, he's getting all these Hughes minutes. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's such a material gap. Like, I think the way that the Canucks are built, and because Tocchet and Foote self-match their top pair with their top line so often, I do think you get into a spot where a Vancouver second line center actually needs to, like, do more to cover up some of the holes that this club has in terms of their second pair. And I actually think freeing him up from that and having Pew Suter, who, by the way, is perfectly capable of that part of the game in particular, I think that's actually, like, quietly creates sort of more of a downhill sledding for him.
Well, and what I think it does is, you know, like, I would know when I was going on the ice, especially if it's a stop and you have, like, clear time to check out who's on the ice with you. But, like, even if it wasn't and you get it, like, you hop over the boards, like, one of your first looks is, who am I on with?
Right.
Because sometimes you get out there and, you know, it's your top pairing. You're like, okay, if there's a turnover in the offensive zone, like, I can hang back a little bit and try and, you know, call it cherry pick or whatever.
Right.
But, like, I know I'm safer. And then sometimes you get out there and it's not the top pair and you know someone has, you know, fighting it a little that night or
sure.
is dealing with something. Now, as soon as there's kind of a bobbled puck, like you're popping back on the D side a little more because you're a little more worried. So you're not playing free offensive hockey at that point, which makes it a little tougher.
All right. Number five. We're digging deep here.
Yeah.
But there's still worthy candidates on the board.
And I don't know if you guys will like it, and I don't know if it's an acceptable answer, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, it's definitely an acceptable answer. We're not going to kick you out.
But you're going to kick me out in about 15 minutes anyway, so what's the difference, right? So,
yeah.
Honestly, I would take out Quinn Hughes and the rest of the decor. because as much as, yeah, there's parts that there's been some turnovers and there's been whatever you want to look at, like that group has been thrown into the limelight here where they were able to just kind of be in the background trying to figure stuff out as much as there was still talk. But even with some of those turnovers and you know, plays that haven't quite worked out, like those guys have battled very hard. They've been put in with different partners, different situations, and you're going through a road trip that you know you're not getting any extra help. And then all of a sudden you lose your next best D and you have to take another step. Yeah. Like that's a lot of pressure and a lot of moving parts that it would be easy for the back end to obviously not say like give up, but I mean like to just sit there and be like, hey, we're doing our best. Like it is what it is. Like Brännström gets another goal to tie it. Like guys are in on plays that, you know, even Noah Juulsen, like he makes a bunch of good blocks. Mm-hmm.
That was a killer PK sequence.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I was laughing when they say like, you know, he's coming off and he goes down the tunnel.
And you just see him like,
yeah. You see him down that, like you see that down the tunnel shot and you know, like I know exactly what he's thinking. You're like, God, that hurt so much, all of those. And it felt awesome at the same time. Because you're like, but for a guy that blocks shots and he's trying to buy goodwill with his team and all of that, like, that's how you do it. Like, you put yourself in front of it, and then as you're going back to the bench, you're trying to figure out, okay, is anything actually hurt, or am I just hurting?
Yeah. Because
there's a difference. But then there's always, I mean, I'm not going to say that he did this. Maybe it was just me, and I just need a little perk up. But, like, I'd be going by the bench, you know, knowing you're going to go walk it off a little, and you just kind of peek a little bit. Like, is anyone looking? Like, are there any these guys appreciate what I just did? And there'd always be one guy that gives you a little smack. You're like, okay, the guy saw it. Like, it was definitely worth it here.
That was a sick. So there's a player type that we see in the NHL. They often get paid pretty well, too. Thinking about, like, an ex-Vancouver Giant, a guy like Mark Fistrick, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, Mark Fistrick wasn't, like, a top four NHL defender. And frankly, he struggled sometimes 5-on-5. Like, he had to be protected. He best used at home on the third pair, but stationary defensive situations on the penalty kill, he was like a monster. And I feel like that's kind of where we're at with Noah Juulsen. You know, you have to be careful about avoiding getting him into those spots where he's on the ice head to head with Philip Forsberg and Connor McDavid and company. I think we saw that in the playoffs. I think we've seen that this year. He'll chase some hits that give up some glorious scoring chances. No question. I think that's always going to be part of the Noah Juulsen experience. I don't even know that you necessarily want it out of the Noah Juulsen experience, given sort of the space that I think that in some ways creates where offensive players at least know, like, hey, this guy's, if I'm going to make a play, I'm going to have to take a hit to do it. But his penalty killing, I think, has really come, like, I think it's become a not just good, I think he's verging on being better than that, like almost special when it's 4-on-5.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, it is a true skill to know your angles, know your lanes on the PK, knowing exactly what your goalie wants. You know, you have the way your team needs to play on the PK, but, you know, the D are always talking with the goalie, like, you know, when the guy's rolling off the right half wall, you know, how far over do you want me taking this? Because generally, they're going to take away the far side of the net, and you're leaving the short side to the goalie. And for different guys, like, they might want you a little more out of the way. Like, I'd rather see more than you get the block. Like, I'm more comfortable with that. Then you have other guys that are saying, like, I don't want anything. I don't have to worry about anything on the backside. Like, you cover as much of that half as you can, and I'll take the, you know, the short side. But for him, like, it doesn't need to be these all-out sliding blocks. Like, that's desperation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Garland assist the other night, unbelievable block. That's desperation.
Yeah, we never see guys leave their feet to block shots anymore for a reason.
Mm.
And generally when you do, and Garland didn't in this point, it's not like he made a mistake, but most of the time when you see especially a forward sliding, it's they've messed up somewhere, and they're like, I need to, well, I am trying to block this, but I need to show the coach and my team, like, I know I messed up, and now I'm throwing myself in front of this because it's kind of my last effort.
By the way, speaking of defensemen stepping up into uncomfortable situations, Carson Soucy got a 3-on-3 shift in overtime. I believe it's the first time as a Vancouver Canuck that he has played in 3-on-3 overtime. And I was surprised when they threw him out there.
I just assumed Brännström would be coming
exactly,
over.
Yeah.
And
or like Myers has been the third guy in the past if you have to go beyond Hughes or Hrota. I was like, all right, Carson Soucy. Interesting.
And no one in the city of Vancouver breathed for 35 seconds. No, Soucy, like on the topic of defenders stepping up, I think Soucy's game has stabilized a little bit on this road trip, and they've needed it too.
Would you not say his game from like kind of that halfway or third period of the Ranger game?
Yes,
it's like that was almost like a clear night and day switch.
Yep.
And I think the biggest thing is his feet have stopped arguing with each other a bit, and like I've known him for a long time and seen him, like he's a great skater. And that's how when he does make the wrong read, he can recover quickly because he's so long and he's such a good skater. In the first, call it 14 games or so, that just wasn't the case, and it has been kind of a nice turnaround.
When he's good, he's really good. It's just I don't know what, I honestly still can't diagnose it. I can't tell you why he hasn't been to the level that I expected him to be at, that the club expects him to be at. But I think the feet arguing with each other is a good formulation, because even the stuff he does so well to keep puck carriers to the outside just by using that reach, even that's been like few and far between. We've seen those sequences few and far between this season, and I know that that's going to be a defining sort of element of his game over the balance.
We should take a quick break here. You want to stick around for a little bit on the other side?
So I passed the test.
you did just well enough. You've earned more time.
Just squeaked
on
it out.
Show. Yeah, that's right. Passing grade. That's what we're all going for here. We will take a quick break. We'll be back with more Landon Ferraro here on the other side on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, Landon Ferraro joining us in studio here for another segment. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got lots more to chat about with Landon, but if you got any questions for Landon, you can send them in. 650, 650. We'll see if we have time to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now, we did the rank the five Canucks who have stepped up the most on this road trip so far. Of course, they're 4-1, one game to go tomorrow in Minnesota, and we liked your list. The texters, a couple people texting in, upset about the absence of Connor Garland on the list. Now, Connor Garland has been really good, but it's also, I think, I wonder if we're finally at the stage where we kind of just expect it from Connor Garland, right? Rather than looking at it as like, wow, they're getting this performance from Connor Garland. Like, I almost think he's been doing it enough now, but it's just like, yeah, Connor Garland's been really good, setting up people for scoring chances and controlling play, and that's what Connor Garland does.
Yeah, I will definitely side on that right now, because that was the first ever list I've done on this show and completely forgot to put him in. I put the entire defense corps before him. But no, I would say that I don't think he popped into my head, because I don't think he's stepped up any more than he has this entire season. And saying that he's stepped up bigger now would almost discredit some of the work that he's done all this year. And that's the best answer I could come up quickly thinking of that one. But no, like, he's been so good and so on it all year that I didn't expect, and I'm imagining you two as well, didn't expect for him to take a step back in this time. Like, he's a guy that has always had a chip on his shoulder to prove that he could play and play bigger minutes, and not just be that guy that can fill in. And he's really proven that this year, that with sustained more ice time and more opportunity, like, he's just excelled even more.
So Garland leads all Canucks forwards in ice time on this road trip. He's played four more minutes than Elias Pettersson. He has 7 points across these five games. Now, I'm going to go back into jigsaw mode and ask you guys if you want to play a game.
Oh, my gosh.
This is for both of you. Of Connor Garland's 7 points,
yeah,
over under have over under 3.5 5-on-5 points.
I'm going to say under.
2.5 5-on-5 points.
Ooh, under.
1.5 5-on-5 points.
Cheater. I looked at this before, actually. I saw this in some reading earlier today.
And so you'll take the under?
It's under. Yeah. Under.
It's one. 1 5-on-5 point. So he's had the empty net goal in Boston. He's had the 3-on-3 goal in Buffalo, right? He's been contributing on the power play, and he's leading this team in minutes. He's the actual JT Miller replacement.
I was going to say, you're doing the JT Miller. He's doing the JT Miller from earlier in the year.
He's the JT Miller. It's like, then this is what's so fascinating about sort of the scaling up of Connor Garland's opportunity, right? It's like, by 5-on-5 points, right, since Garland joined the Canucks, the gap between Miller and Pettersson and him has been like pretty narrow. Honestly, 5-on-5 offense, it's like 1-2-3, Garland's in third with a bullet behind Miller and Pettersson, but like the gap between them has been like 3 goals, like 10 points, which obviously doesn't match the fact that both Miller and Pettersson have had 100-point seasons over the course of that span, and Garland's never peaked above 55 in a Canucks uniform. But his role has scaled up, and where he's really eating right now isn't where he usually does, which is, you know, being this like rate stat all-star in a role lower down the lineup. It, even though his 5-on-5 offense and even if his 5-on-5 play driving has been at a different level, he's taken advantage of the minutes in all other situations, the empty net closer role, the power play role,
overtime.
And he's overtime, and he's producing all this offense around the margins, which is sort of, I think, both an evolution for him, but I also think clarifying in terms of what the Canucks needed with Miller out of the lineup.
Well, and that's kind of a hallmark of great players, though, right? They get those opportunities and they just always find a way to pick up those points, right? And sometimes then you pull up like the 5-on-5 points per 60 leaders at the end of the season and you're like, oh, this guy ranks a lot lower than I would have thought. But he's good enough to always be out there in these situations, right? And then take advantage of it. And that's always a question with a guy like Connor Garland when he's moving up the lineup and getting these opportunities. It's like, okay, but can you take advantage of them? And maybe I'm trying to put too much of a silver lining on it on the lack of 5-on-5 production, but like I do think it speaks to it speaks to something positive about Garland that he has been able to not just get these minutes, but then also be productive in them with the new minutes and responsibility as well.
And I think the crazy part with him is, and it's basically everyone on this team because of just how this season has gone with so many guys in and out, but like he's doing it in basically different positions, different players. Like, he's been jumped around this lineup pretty good for an entire season so far. And, I mean, even throwing in the game that where his wife was in going into labor, right, doesn't know. It's like, he's at the rink, gone, at the rink again. Like, it doesn't matter what you've thrown at him. He just, it almost seems like a guy that's sitting there and is like, I knew that I could do this. I finally have gotten an opportunity. Doesn't matter how it's come, but, like, there's no way I'm letting this go. Mm. And yeah, the 5-on-5 points aren't there and through this stretch, but I think it, you know, for a lot of the players that are top end of a lineup, yeah, you need to obviously score 5-on-5, but he is controlling play a lot. Like, they have the puck, but it's when you're so much more focused on the power play and those bigger moment things, like, it's easier to just focus on that, and then you're almost, this isn't the right wording, and I'm not saying that he's doing this, but like you're almost just getting through your 5-on-5. Like,
right,
if I can make this net zero and then we score on the power play, like that's where we can do this. Like, we're eating time over here and we're capitalizing over there.
The other thing is, it does seem like he's finding this chemistry with Pugh Suter, which I think they've had in the past, but they were so snake bit in the early part of last year. And when Miller sort of was out, and for that Rangers game, they talk it elevated Puce to play with Garland and Joshua, sort of eschewing this Bluger Joshua Garland line that's been such a mainstay for this team lower down the lineup. I thought that was a really savvy move to go with the guy who has slightly more upside in Pugh Suter in that top six role in Miller's absence, as opposed to doing the familiar, the safety blanket line that's done a good job for you. I feel like that's an instructive inflection point sort of moment for Rick Tocchet, given that what's conventional, like, he, as old school as Tocchet is, right, there's moments where he'll eschew sort of the conventional decision that I think actually provide a lot of insight into sort of his understanding of just sort of how to get the most out of his players. I don't know that a lot of coaches would have made that call.
And I don't think a lot of coaches, I mean, there's more so now, but I don't think a lot of coaches have been in the situations that Rick Tocchet has been
right.
in. And like, I can almost picture him, you know, in his coach's room and he's going through his lineup and he's like, you know, his coach brain is saying, like, it should be this. This is the safer pick. And then I can almost just see him wrinkling it up and be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like,
right.
I think this is better. And you need to take all the analytics and listen to the rest of your coaching staff. But at the end of the day, like, I feel that coaches, like, they need to trust their gut
right.
and not be afraid of it not working out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a player, like, when they're trying to work through something, you can't ask them to be, okay, go be very careful on the ice and don't give anything up, but we need you to figure out your offense too. Like, that doesn't work. You have to just go lean into what you bring to the situation. And for Tocchet, it's a lot of experience and being in the same shoes as these guys. Like, I like Suter with Garland in the sense of, like, they're both puck hounds.
Mm-hmm.
They both are relentless on a forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do turn a puck over, it's not just about, like, getting back to the D side and being in good position, but it's like, okay, well, you need to get back and be in good spots so that now I'm the last back checker and now I can go right at the puck and we can try and get this back before it even gets to the red line.
Mm.
Like, I like that tenacity out of those two.
Well, and Garland is such a good playmaker, and Suter is really clever about finding those open spots, right?
Yeah.
And kind of timing it right to get in position to take the pass from Garland below the goal line. And it's, again, it's not necessarily what you think of Pew Suter's role being on a team, but he's just so versatile. It seems like everything the team asks him to do, he finds a way to be effective at it right now. Okay, so I do want to, you know, we've done all the feel-good stories, or a lot of the feel-good stories from the road trip. And look, they're 4-1 through five games, but there are a couple of red flags or concerning items percolating as well. And one of the big ones is Nils Höglander. And, you know, this is a guy who early in the season, and even before that at training camp, you know, comes in great shape, gets rewarded with the big contract, is playing, you know, 17 minutes a night some games. And then it's all gone downhill really, really rapidly. He's been under 10 minutes. I think he was right around 10 minutes in Detroit. And it just feels like he's in one of those moments where every time he's on the ice, something is going wrong for him, right? Whether it's a penalty, whether it's a turnover, not back checking, whatever it is, it just feels like, you know, you said about Carson Soucy, like, he's arguing with his feet. I don't know what Nils Höglander is arguing with right now, but, like, something is going wrong almost every time he's out there, it feels like.
And honestly, like, I feel like things are going wrong because he is trying so hard to do the right thing. Like, you can almost see it on his face. Like, I mean, he took another penalty in Detroit there. You know, a pretty useless trip below the offensive goal line. But again, like, going back to Garland, he goes in there and, like, you know he's going to come out with that puck. And Höglander goes in with the same intensity, if not more. Like, that guy is determined to go get the puck. But once it moves a little bit away, Garland does such a good job of using his feet to get back in front of it and then launching himself back into the battle. Höglander, it seems like right now, it's he misses the first check or the pin trying to, you know, hold the puck there and instantly is like, I need to get this back this second. Instead of just, you know, he's fast and he works hard. Like, if he just takes two steps back above the goal line and then jumps back in, you've gotten in front of the defender again. You've got on the D side. So at worst, yeah, the puck might end up on your backside, but you're still going into the defender. Like, at least you're taking someone with you. And for now, it's like, it's a lot of desperation because he knows the situation that he's in. Like, his ice time has been dwindling. Yeah, he got to, you know, whatever he got to in Detroit there. I think it was just over
10 and a half, yeah.
And that's with Garland missing time.
Yep.
So, like, he probably had to get played a little bit or it would have been under 10 again. He's one of those guys where I just hope that they can figure it out because I think he's an extremely useful piece. And again, like, it's not like these mistakes are coming because he doesn't care or he's been lazy. It's he's trying so hard to do the right thing. And it's hard to, you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing, but like if you're taking the groceries in from your car and you carry 12 bags at once and three break, like you were trying to do
the right thing. You're trying to prove a point.
Yeah, like you're trying to show like, I can do it. I can do it in one go. But it doesn't matter if you can't hold the weight, it doesn't matter. So like, I think that's his biggest issue right now, but you can't just say you need to relax. Like as much as he just needs to relax a bit, and because he works so hard, his brain doesn't go at the same pace, and that's where you end up with reach-ins.
Well, it just feels like it's this vicious cycle, right? Where Tockett's lost trust in him and that reduces his confidence, right? So that's impacting the way he plays, but then because of the lack of confidence and the inability to just relax a little bit out there, he's making these mistakes, and then Tockett loses more trust, and it's a vicious cycle.
And we've gotten to the point where Hoglander takes offensive zone penalty, cut to Rick Tockett sneering on the bench is like a feature of
stock
podcast
footage. Yeah.
Like we see it as often as we hear Shorthouse remind us that there's 4:20 left in a period.
By the way, the Canucks scored with 3:20 left. I think it was the Brännström goal to tie it. They scored with three, and you could hear like the sadness in Shorty's voice that it wasn't 4:20. Like, the Canucks score with 3:20 left. I'm so disappointed that it wasn't 4:20.
Would have been great. Just 4:20 minus a minute. You all can do math. Like, let's just get
just
here.
A minute after the 4:20 mark, the Canucks tie it up here.
I want to talk Kiefer Sherwood really quick before we sort of move on here, because, you know, we're only like 5 days removed from me having to send out a tweet, Jamie, sort of reminding people of how good Alex Burrows was.
Yes.
Because of the Burrows, Kiefer Sherwood comps. That line has sort of an iffy game against the Penguins. They were hardly alone. Besser ends up on that line for the last two games, and Sherwood's back sort of down the lineup. He's played well. He's still Kiefer Sherwood. The intensity's been there. The shot is still dangerous, like a solid weapon. But I sort of wonder if he shoots too much to, like, his high-volume shooting, I love it, down lineup, where you're an against-the-grain attacker, and you're a source of, you know, maybe 10 goals from the fourth line, 10 to 15 goals from the fourth line. Like, I love that. I like the idea of him as Tyler Mott plus, but if you're playing with DeBrusk and Pettersson, I need someone who's holding the puck a little bit more, deferring a little bit more, especially given the finishing talent that those two gentlemen have. That's sort of my impression of him. Where are you sort of at where with Kiefer Sherwood post top line glow up?
I would say it's tough for him in the sense that you get that more opportunity and you're having a career year so far. And like, there's so many things that went right for him. And the reason that he got the opportunity to move up is because he was shooting a lot and converting on it. So you now get to the best guys. And, you know, when he first got moved up there, I remember saying, like, it's so important for him not to change his game just because he's with these way more skilled players now. Like, you're not all of a sudden going to be, you know, just throwing, you know, unbelievable cross-seam passes and ripping apart defensemen in the O-zone. Like, he's still the same hard-nosed North-type player.
Mm.
And you're on such an incredible run that you get into that position, and it's hard to turn that off and just kind of bring it back to what got him to that spot, and that's, you know, great on a forecheck, creating space for those guys. Like, that's where it all is going to work, is really opening up the ice and letting the better skilled players take over. And, you know, you look at guys like him through the history of hockey, really, like, there's generally one bigger player that can really skate and be physical that ends up kind of getting locked to a superstar or a star player, because they'll go do the work, and then I'll just get back to the net, and you either put the thing in or put it off my sticking end. Like, you know, you're talking about Burrows, though, like, not to minimize what he did, but he understood that, okay, the two other guys I'm playing with are way better than I am.
Right.
So if I do thing A and thing B, which is go get the puck and give the puck and just get to the net, like, I'm going to have a pretty good season. And Sherwood, I think, would figure that out quickly if he got a bit more time in that spot. But coming into this year, like, this is how it's supposed to be. Like, yeah, the points and goals have been a bit more than expected, but he's a guy that, you know, we've all talked about it, but coming into the year, of he's got more offense than what he's shown. he's going to be a third line player, but when he needs it, they can jump him up in the lineup and provide like that extra little boost when a line doesn't have it. Well, that's exactly what he did, and he did it perfectly. And now Besser slides back in there. When JT comes in, now lines are going to kind of get moved into it again. Like, one of those lines are going to hit a cold spell. They're going to need some help. And that's the type of player that can jump in. Like, I think he's had a great, I mean, not that it's hard to say, like, he's had a great start to the year, and him getting moved off that line doesn't show that they don't, they think he's kind of, you know, it's hit midnight at the ball and that's the end of it. Like, he's going to be doing this the rest of the year. It's just going to be sporadic of when he's with the bigger guys.
Well, and he got bumped off for Brock Besser. Brock Besser's a 40-goal scorer, right? Brock Besser's a really, really good player, right? It's not like he got bumped off because, yeah, let's try Danton Heinen up here or something, right? It was he got bumped out for the best winger on the team. And, you know, I think it was probably inevitable that he was going to lose a top six role just because of the competition on the wings for on this team, right? And if Miller comes back at some point and Pugh Suter gets moved back to the wing, I mean, you've got Besser, you've got Suter, you've got Garland, and probably Dakota Joshua still all ahead of Kiefer Sherwood on the kind of winger depth chart. So that's okay. Like, you didn't sign him to be a bona fide top six guy. If he can do that when you need him from time to time, that's great, but he just needs to thrive in that third line role or fourth line role even potentially for to be worth it for the team.
And I think that he's someone like, you know, just having the couple like very quick conversations after a morning skate or something, like, you can see how much he cares about this opportunity that he's had, right? Like, I know what it's like to, you're sitting in your dressing room or you're in training camp, whatever the situation is, and you're sitting there like, man, like, I got a little bit of a shot last game. Like, I got to pop in while someone took a coincidental or whatever right. it is. And, like, I had, like, three chances in two shifts. And I might have put one of those in. And you're sitting there and you're like, if I could just have this opportunity, like, I can do it. But the amount of us that you get that opportunity at a certain point and you can't hold on to it for an extended time, like, five-plus games. Like, it is very hard to be elite in this league, and that's something that all of us forget, even when we're talking about the star players, when they have a little slump. Like, it's not as easy as it looks to just go put up, like in Pettersson's case, like, go put up 16 points in 11 games.
No,
like, I didn't put up 16 points in 77 games. I tried really, really hard, but, you know, like, you can't change into something so drastically so quick. And that's, again, like, Sherwood, I think, is just pumped that he's in a situation where he knows he's going to get more opportunities, and as long as he's ready and takes advantage of them, then pretty soon, as you get into the next year and whatever's moving on past that, and they're looking at their team and, okay, where do we need to bring someone in? Well, maybe we don't need to bring in another top six guy, because in a year and a half, Sherwood's actually ready to be there full time. And now you've got him, even if that's next year, you got him at 1.5, and you take full advantage of that. Well, underpay, really.
Yes, absolutely. It's certainly looking that way right now. Landon, this was awesome, man. Thank you for doing this. I don't know that we pitched you on an hour when we invited you in, but thank you for sticking around for the full hour with us. That was awesome.
Was
and
blast,
we'll do it
man.
Again soon.
Yeah, it was a little weird that you locked the door halfway through the first segment, but
we've got him here. Trap him.
Nah,
we'll do this again. That is Landon Ferraro, former NHL player, now Canucks analyst, regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. We got one final segment coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. The Canucks practiced today in Minnesota. They'll take on the league-leading Minnesota Wild tomorrow to wrap up their six-game road trip. That's going to be a very, very tough test. Obviously, the opponents up till now on the road trip have not really been the best of the league, but Minnesota is, by definition, right now, the best of the league. So we'll see how the Canucks respond to that. We'll get more into...
By point percentage?
I think so. Aren't they?
I think that was a joke.
Yeah, they are.
That was a joke.
Okay, they are. 750. Nice. Good for them.
But that was a joke, right?
What? The by points percentage?
He loved
it. He was definitely not joking.
I was not. No.
No,
I was,
no.
He doesn't joke about points percentage.
I was about to quibble with
deadly serious.
He just likes having a laugh at that conversation.
I don't.
No, he does not.
I firmly believe in it. I don't find it's not a laughing matter. It's a true thing. We should just all use point percentage. I don't know what we're talking about. Of course we should.
750 to 729 for the Washington Capitals.
Well, the beauty of it is at the end of the year, when every team has played 82 games, points percentage doesn't matter because they've all played the same amount of games. So it's just the points.
Right. And
okay.
The Wild. do we know about Zuccarello? Will Zuc play?
I Sugar do not Man.
Know. We don't know if Zuc will play. It looks like Joel Eriksson Ek missed practice, as did Marcus Johansson, in addition to Jonas Brodin. Brodin's actually hurt, probably won't be in the lineup for the Wild, but looks like maintenance for Eriksson Ek and Johansson, according to my esteemed colleague at The Athletic, Michael Russo.
All right, there was a couple of interesting things of note from Canucks practice that Dan Murphy reported a little bit earlier. We didn't have a chance to get into it during the whiteboard, so I'll just give you those notes before we hear from Rick Tocchet. And Murph was reporting that Quinn Hughes and Noah Juulsen were skating together, as well as the Susie Myers pair being reunited in Minnesota practice. But he then followed it up to say that Myers took turns with Hughes, which is what we've seen over the last couple of games without Philip Hronek in the lineup. Also said Myers took some turns with Mark Friedman, who's the extra defenseman they have here that they called up after the Hronek injury. So we'll see. Could point to a potential shuffle of the defensive pairs tomorrow in Minnesota? Could be nothing. Could just be a practice game trying a few things out, but that was the latest from Dan Murphy. Doesn't sound like there were any changes at forward, and of course I don't believe they have an extra healthy forward on the trip with them right now, so you could reconfigure the lines, but there's no, you know, if you were worried about a Nils Höglander or healthy scratch or something like that, that would mean going 11-7, which we know Rick Tocchet has not been a big fan of doing. Okay, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after practice in Minnesota.
Well, last one of this road trip, just talk about how you guys are feeling coming off the practice today and going into this.
Yeah, I think the mentality, the road mentality, you know, sticking with it. I mean, there's a little bit of everything on this road trip. You know, we've had some really good moments. Some guys have really stepped up in key moments. You know, we've had some bad periods. You know, the starts have been a little bit, you know, we've talked about, and we'll continue to work on that. Obviously, I like the fight in the team, you know, even though we're down. And then, like I said, there's been spurts of really good play by a lot of different people. So, you know, we got a good chance to have a hell of a road trip with a win tomorrow against, I think, one of the top teams in the league right now.
Your last, my numbers aren't totally accurate here, but your last 60-ish road games, you're playing at a clip that over the course of an 82-game season would be about 110 points. So just road games. Yeah. Like, what makes a good road team?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, sticking your game for 60 minutes. I always talk about don't get antsy. You know, move the game along. These are the kind of terms that we talk about in the room. Take what's given sometimes. You know, I think that's the approach you have to have. If you're behind and there's 30 minutes left, you know, we don't need people diving in, pressing the envelope. You just like I said, move the game along. Those are the kind of things, and I got to give the, you know, the leadership group a lot of credit. I mean, they enjoy being together. There's a, you know, and that's a big thing too. You know, you look, you know, since I've been here, I look at the team. You know, when you look at guys going out for dinner, there's usually, I never see two packs of two. I see packs of six, eight, ten. I mean, that's a good thing when you have a lot of guys hanging together.
Did you find that you didn't let the game get too far away from you guys? Like, Detroit has a bit of a push, and then you guys were able to quell that and get the momentum back. And then they got another push, and then, you know, it wasn't four, five, six, seven shifts in a row where they did something. It was maybe two, and then you guys were able to right the ship.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it flipped, right? We're up 3-2, power play goal. I do the challenge. You know, they score again after, you know, like two, three minutes later. I just like, I didn't see guys, you know, nobody was slamming gates, nobody was frustrated. You know, we still had time. And that's a temperament of a good team. It's just, hey, like there's nothing you can do within the moment. Somebody's going to make a mistake in a game. So how do we, you know, how do we stay with it? And I think that's why, you know, getting that big goal, 3 minutes left, and the momentum of it, and obviously Jake and Petey with a great overtime goal.
Yeah, all the focus is always on Quinn Hughes and what he's doing, and then DeBrusk with his big night. But you look at Juleson's shot blocks on that power penalty kill, and then Brännström gets a big goal for you. Like, those guys come up big for you in smaller ways.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like, yeah, it's easy to say, no, it's great. Jake was unreal. Three goals. Like, this guy scores, and this guy makes a great assist. Like, there's more to these moments. You know, the Juleson blocks three shots. A couple of guys with a good stick, where if their stick's not in the lane, it's in the net. Like, these are the moments I look at, like the pressure moments. So, yeah, scoring goals, that's what it's all about. You, I mean, that's awesome. But I look at the little things. I think when you have you accumulate all the little things, that's a good team.
You see when he blocks those shots, you kind of feel it on the bench, like, oh, God, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, the one there, that one when I thought he broke a rib. That had some heat to it. And there's not a lot of padding there. So I got to give him a lot of credit. And he's out there practicing today.
Hronek was with the team. Is he still around, or is he?
He's back getting evaluated, seeing some people. Yep, and hopefully get some insight of that next couple of days.
That is Rick Tocchet there, and you just heard the update on Philip Hronek at the end, back in Vancouver, getting evaluated, as Tocchet said, talking to some different people. Hopefully they get some clarity, some insight in the next couple of days. And a lot of credit given out to Noah Juleson, but also just the team as a whole, right? Doing those things on the road that Rick Tocchet kind of credited with, you add them all up and they make you a good road team, right? Shot blocking shots on the penalty kill, sticks in lanes, sticking to your game for 60 minutes, all of those things. And all of that has helped the Canucks win four of these first five games on this road trip in challenging circumstances. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit with Landon and a little bit in the whiteboard as well, Drancer, but I did say I wanted to park some time to talk about the level that Quinn Hughes is at right now, because I think I agree with everything Tocchet was saying there, right? It is really important that Noah Juleson is blocking those shots on the penalty kill, right? And Erik Brännström steps up with a big goal to tie the game late in Detroit. And you can find all these moments, obviously Pius Suter goals in three straight games, right? Jake DeBrusk all of a sudden leads the team in scoring. But I also can't escape the feeling that all of those good little things wouldn't really matter if Quinn Hughes wasn't doing the big stuff at an extraordinarily high level night after night after night for the Canucks right now. And not to take away credit from any of the other players on the team or the coaches or anything like that, or certainly Kevin Lankinen, Elias Pettersson, but it really is. I think when we start to drill down at all the other things that are going right for the Canucks right now and helping them win games, sometimes it almost makes us lose sight of just how much Quinn Hughes is doing and what a high level he's doing at it. And okay, we didn't put him in our, you know, stepping up rankings, right? Because he's not stepping up. He's just being Quinn Hughes. But if we're just talking about number one reasons why they've been able to keep winning games this year, number one, I think pretty clearly is Quinn Hughes.
Quinn Hughes is, yeah, I mean, I think Quinn Hughes is the floor. Like, that's what's been so incredible in some ways about this run. You know, I think the object lesson of what we're seeing from the Canucks on this road trip across the board is, provided that you have Quinn Hughes,
yeah,
you know, there's a certain level that you're kind of not going to dip below. And that level, by the way, is I'll be honest with you. I think when you correct for the quality of competition in that they've faced on this road trip, and it's not high, like it's not, you know, this isn't to take away from a team that's done awfully well to hold the fort, as it were, right? Hold the fort.
Mm-hmm. A resounding success.
Smash success.
Yeah.
But the Canucks have played on this road trip teams that, as it stands today, are ranked 19th, 20th, 25th, 26th, and 28th in the NHL by point percentage, right? Not a single top half team until they face number one on Tuesday to close the trip off. And I think generally that they've played at a level of a fringe playoff team. That's what I'd say. Mm-hmm. They've played at the level of a fringe playoff team, but these weighted coin flips have been in their favor. And that's sort of the baseline level that this team will hold at, absent a Vezina caliber goaltender, a top pair caliber defender, you know, for some games, a 40 goal scorer in Brock Besser and their top forward. That's amazing. Like, that's an amazing testament to the engine. And you know, you remember when this club was struggling in overtime situations earlier this season?
Yeah.
So
is Quinn Hughes the best 3-on-3 player in the league? Like, it's still McDavid, right?
We're not there yet.
But it's like, he's incredible right now. Well, the way he dominates is unreal.
But he's also dominating differently. And I think this is where... So the Canucks struggled early in the season 3-on-3 and have clearly redesigned what they're doing. And you know, I've talked a lot about hating 3-on-3 and what it's become. And the Canucks, of course, are now having success by being the worst defenders at the suck all fun from 3-on-3 situations. In Vancouver's 8 minutes of 3-on-3 time over the their last two games, like over this weekend against Detroit and Buffalo, nothing happened. Like, it was incredible how little occurred other than the Canucks just slowly but surely eating clock. You know, like eating clock and making sure that whoever got the first scoring chance, it was going to be them and it was going to end the game. And by the way, this isn't criticism, right? Like that's not, I'm not being critical here so much as I'm just pointing out the
fact they're responding to the incentives. Like that's all they're doing. They're saying, what's the best way for us to get 2 points here? And it's that.
7 minutes and 59 seconds of 3-on-3 time. Two goals for the Canucks. Okay. 11 total shot attempts. Right? Seven total shots.
Yeah.
That's like low event hockey at 5-on-5. Honestly, that's like 50 shots an hour both ways. Right? It's nothing. It's nothing. They are playing, it's 80 shots an hour. It's 80 shot attempts an hour.
Yeah.
That's low event hockey at 5-on-5. And they're surrendering absolutely nothing because they just dominate the puck and they wait and they take their time. And when Quinn Hughes isn't on the ice, they're going to look to get a change and Quinn Hughes is going to end it. And that's how they play. And, you know, again, not criticism. That's an adaptation. That's an evolution that we're seeing in this team, figuring out how to game the system 3-on-3, which is exactly what you should do, given the NHL sort of inputting what's effectively a coin flip game state on the end of games. That's actually pretty valuable.
Yes.
It makes a huge difference.
Well, how differently are we talking about this team if they've lost both of those games in 3-on-3,
even
right?
If they've
like, they've lost three in a row now, and yeah, they picked up points, but sure. Are they doing enough? We're talking about it totally differently.
You're right. We are. And we probably shouldn't. Like, we shouldn't wait.
And that's wrong,
yes.
But it does have a huge impact on how we see these teams.
Totally. We should not wait 3-on-3 at all. Honestly, a game gets past regulation, we should just... In terms
mentally
of how
we file it as a tie.
Mentally file it as a tie.
Yeah.
And in fact, why don't we resolve to do that on our program?
I don't want to make promises I can't keep.
Well, I'm going to do it.
Okay. Good luck with that.
So the Canucks really on this road trip are 2-1-2. Do you think people are going to be mad at me for noting
this? I do.
Okay. Well, then
I absolutely do.
All the more reason to adapt
to keep
this
doing
my
it.
Stance.
Yeah.
Anyway, Quinn Hughes is clearly the driver of the 3-on-3 stuff. And
yeah.
I do think, like, this team all season, we've talked about them having this high floor, right? We haven't seen a ceiling case from this team yet, frankly, right? Which is why, you know, I think like their Stanley Cup odds have faded, right? They're priced at 20-1 today. They're like just hanging on among the top 10 teams in terms of Stanley Cup odds at this point in the season from a gambling odds perspective. And why? Because the Canucks haven't looked great at any point, right?
Nope.
Like the case for this is a great team. Which, by the way, I'm not writing off, but the case for it is
we're in a holding pattern.
Well, it's purely hypothetical. We just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But what we have seen is this team demonstrate this floor, that they are good. Like, we know that they are a good team capable of grinding out wins and apparently capable of grinding out wins and remaining like a functional hockey team, a functional playoff caliber hockey team. Almost no matter how many losses they sustain, provided those losses don't include number 43.
Yes.
What
that
I don't,
is
what,
pretty clearly the doomsday scenario.
What
here.
I do not want to see is this team
no,
have to play a month and
not.
A half of hockey without 43. That sounds like a nightmare.
No, that would be ugly. It's just, you know.
You think that would be ugly? I do too.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yes. Because I think a part of what's going on here also is he has shaped this team to him so much. You know what I mean? He does so much for this team it would be almost impossible to adjust for all of the different things that he's providing, and not just providing, but providing at an exceptional level. And, you know, I know they were dropping the like cross sports comps on the post game show last night. And I was thinking about this, and like, it really does remind me a little bit of, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, it really does remind me a little bit of like peak LeBron, where it would be like these sequences where it would be like, you know, he's playing great perimeter defense, and then he switches onto a big and he forces a missed shot, and then he grabs the rebound, and then he makes the great outlet pass up the court, and then he's the guy filling the lane to dunk it. And he's done like five different things for his team in like a 45-second span to help them win and to help them produce. And with Quinn Hughes, it's like he's back in the defensive zone. He strips the opposing player of the puck. He uses his skating to create time and space. He helps them exit the zone. He carries it through the neutral zone. And then on top of all of that, which already, if you just stop there, it's like, okay, he's an elite defenseman. And then on top of all of that, increasingly, and especially with JT Miller out, he's the guy pulling the strings in the offensive zone, right? Like, he's the key playmaker. He's the one creating these openings in the defense, allowing them to have success. Every phase of the game, every zone right now, he's dominating. So, yeah, it would be horrifically ugly, I think, if they were to lose Quinn Hughes at any point for any significant stretch this season. And I think you're absolutely right to say, like, he's in that category of player where their floor, no matter how, like, we've seen it with Colorado this year, right? They've been missing tons of different players at different points, but they have Nathan MacKinnon and, yes, Cale Makar as well. So they're always going to be around the playoff points. And I think that's what the Canucks are. With Quinn Hughes, you go into a fringe playoff team like Buffalo or Detroit, and you're probably going to be in that game because you have Quinn Hughes.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and this is the biggest test yet because, you know, I do think that we're at like, so Quinn Hughes was the second star of the NHL. He had more points than Macklin Celebrini. The Sharks have shot 17% 5-on-5 across the last 10 days. What Celebrini is doing, by the way, is unbelievable. And if you want to hear me get into it more, you can check out today's PDO cast, by the way, because we spent 20 minutes talking about how fun the Sharks have been across the last week. As Canucks fans remember from last fall, when you're converting 17% of your shots, it's real fun. It's fun hockey. On this shorthanded team, Hughes, to play the minutes he's done, to do it on the road, to for this team to have had the results that they've had, and for him to have 9 points this week and not be the first star, that's very much the NHL just trying to be like stamping Macklin Celebrini as something to pay attention to. And by the way, fine. Like, you know what?
They're correct.
Yeah. Well, also the Sharks are at that moment that Canucks fans may remember when like Young, Hughes, Pettersson, and Besser out against the Kings 3-on-3, yep. And it was like, oh, we can finally see the world beginning to turn, right? That's where the Sharks are at with Celebrini and Smith and Eklund and Zetterlund and the fun that they're having, and that's great. That's good for the league that there's like at least one of those perpetual rebuilding teams are starting to show some signs of life.
It's exciting, like, yeah.
That's good. Thank goodness. So I'm not even criticizing them. I'm just saying there's no question that Quinn Hughes was the most valuable player in hockey this week. I think he's been one of the five most valuable players in hockey. Yeah. And I do think we should be setting those stakes, too. Like, Kaprizov's among the favorites, if not the outright favorite.
If the season ended today, I think he would be Kaprizov. I don't think it would be especially close for the Hart.
Well, what are the gambling markets?
I don't know. But that's factoring in the rest of the season, right? I'm just talking like today. You take a snapshot right now. If you were to pull the voting population on it, it would be Kaprizov.
So Kaprizov currently is plus 250. He is the favorite. McDavid plus 280. MacKinnon plus 450. Nikita Kucherov plus 700. Jack Eichel plus 1600. Martin Natchez 18-1. Makar 20-1. Panarin 22-1. Hellebuck 22-1. Draisaitl 30-1. Reinhardt 33-1. Matthews 75-1. Rantanen 75-1. Jack Hughes is the first of the Hughes family. 100-1 tied with Barkov, Tkachuk, Pasternak, and Mitch Marner before you get to Quinn Hughes. 100-1 for MVP.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Well,
I think I'd shout that out.
It is interesting.
Now,
because
you can get him 5-1 to win the Norris.
The Norris, yeah.
Which I think is the better way to play it. But if you wanted to do like a $100 bet on Quinn Hughes to win the Norris, maybe do 75.
Oh, yeah,
75 on Norris and 25. At 100-1, That might be the play, because I mean, a stretch like this too should be a narrative buster.
Yes,
should
it is.
Be one of those
it's a narrative
things
builder, right?
Yeah, that changes how people are viewing this player.
And the other thing I'll say about it, just purely from a betting odds and all that, and a forecasting, right? Probably, I think it's fair to say, the most influential media voice in hockey, Elliot Friedman, picked him to win the Hart, right? And I'm not saying Elliot Friedman is going to put his thumb on the scale, but that's part of what can get the momentum building, right? If you have people with big platforms and very influential pointing it out, saying like, hey, don't forget about this guy for the Hart, that gets him on other people's radar, right? And they start to pay attention and see what's going on.
He's also been producing at such a preposterous rate here. Like, we're talking about a guy who's now on pace for like 5 goals. Means that he's on pace to get close to 20 again.
Yeah.
Right? 23 assists in 23 games. If I'm not incorrect, that means you're pacing for 82 assists. What's 82 assists plus roughly 20 goals?
100 points. Yeah, he's on pace for 100 points, basically. I think it's like 99.8 or something, but yeah.
So, okay, Drance.
What? We're the technical show, right? We're the pedantic show.
That was too pedantic even for me. I'm like, okay, Jamie. Anyway, my point being, if you think that this team is going to be better down the stretch,
yeah,
right? If you think there's going to be a run where we actually do see this team play great hockey and play to their ceiling once they get some bodies back, which I think is a reasonable...
Yeah, it's not outlandish.
No. In fact, it's fat part of the bell curve, to be honest, is that we haven't seen the best of this team. And if Hughes is going to keep them afloat with individual efforts like this during the sort of barren stretches and then keep eating when the team's at their best, and this team is going to challenge Vegas and Edmonton mm-hmm. for the Pacific Division crown, again, all fat part of the bell curve possibilities. Now, maybe it doesn't happen, but it's certainly realistic. You could get some buzz. Just
absolutely
saying.
He could. All right, we'll leave it there for today. Big shout out to Landon Ferraro for joining us in studio for an hour. We're back tomorrow on a Canucks game day here on Sportsnet 650.